We're doing the Netivot Shalom on Parshat Vayera. Our subject is Venatati Ota Lachem Morasha. I will give it to you as a heritage. Veviti Etchem El Haaretz. God says, I will bring you to the land of Israel. Venatati Ota Morasha Ani Hashem. I will give it to you, Lachem, to you as a heritage. The land will be passed down from generation to generation, says God. I am Hashem. Ne'emru kan bet leshonot. There are two terms used with regards to the land of Israel. Vinatati, God says, I will give. Lashon matana. That comes from the word matana, a gift. Morasha comes from the word yerusha, something that's inherited. So that's the first point. With regards to the land of Israel, we have two terms. The term of a gift and the term of an inheritance. Ve'od ne'emar, further the Torah says later on in Tvarim, uverachta at Hashem elokecha la'aretz ha'tova asher natan lach. When we speak about benching, the Torah says, you will bless Hashem your God over the good land that He gave you. In other words, that He gifted you. Uve mechilta, and in the Medrash mechilta on the verse, v'aya ki yivyacha Hashem elokecha el eretz ha'kanani untana lach, it says, when God will bring you to the lands of the Canaanites, and He'll give it to you, so then you'll designate the firstborns. So the Medrash says, it's described as God will give it to you. Do not view it as an inheritance, but rather the land of Israel should be viewed as though it is a new gift. It was just given to you today. Now, that gets hard. You have a guy who's visiting from California, so then it's exciting to be here. You stay and you deal and you get tired of dealing and you get worn down and you have a guy delivering your oven and he puts it down in the middle of your living room and you say, could you just put that in the kitchen? And he says, they don't pay me to do that. And you look at him and you say, you know, for the same price you put it down there, you could put it down there. And he doesn't answer, he just walks out of the room. And you look at him and you say, right? You hire someone and they rip you off. And then you say, this is what I made Aliyah for. And you suddenly look at the difficulties of living here. And there are so many norms in the United States as far as the relationship with a person that's hired. The customer's always right. Doesn't exist in this country, you know? Just doesn't exist. So, if you're coming from Europe or the United States or Africa, there are norms that you're accustomed to, or South America. So then you suddenly deal with a totally different culture and a totally different land. I remember the first time I saw cucumbers here. Like, those are gherkins in the United States. That too. So, you get tired. And comes the Torah and says, you got to view the land as though it's a fresh gift. It was just given to you today. Umashmut advarim shedargat matana gvah yoter. And the Medrash stresses, view the land as a gift you were given now and not as an inheritance, because the Medrash is assuming, the Medrash is teaching us, that the concept of a current gift is a higher level than an inheritance. We find the same concept, two aspects with regard to Shabbos. Shabbos has these two aspects, a gift and a heritage. As we say in Tefillah, we say, you didn't give it as a gift to the nations of the land, the term matana, ve'lo hinchalto, nor did you give it as a nachala, as an heritage to ovdei fesilim, to pagans. Ki liYisrael amecha, what do we say? Netato, rather you gave it, you gifted it to Israel alone. So you begin with the term of a gift about Shabbos, you continue describing it as a heritage, and you conclude again by saying it's a gift. So again, you have two terms. And these two terms correspond to two concepts, to two aspects of Shabbos. Matana and Yerusha, a gift and a heritage. We'll get back to that. We find Shabbos is called the gift. There's a phenomenal line in the Gemara. God calls Moshe in and says, Matana tova yeshli bevet gnazai. I have a good gift in my treasury. Among my treasures, my hidden treasures, I have a good gift, v'shabbat shema. It's called Shabbos. So there the Gemara is actually stressing that Shabbos is a good gift that Hashem has. V'gam al ha-Torah ne'emru bet l'shanot elu. And we find with regards to Torah, we also have these two terms. It says, Torah tziva lanu Moshe morasha. The Torah is our heritage. It's an inheritance. And yet the Torah is described as a gift. Vayitein el Moshe kechaloto. It says when God finished speaking to Moshe, he gifted him the Torah. He gave it to him as a gift. And our commentaries, our sages say in Tractate Nidarim that the term Vayitein ota el Moshe kechaloto, God gave it as a matana kekala lachatan. Like the gift a chosan gets as his bride is coming to him. That's his gift. He merits to have her as his bride. And yet our blessing is, Baruch Ata Hashem noten haTorah. We thank Hashem who gifted us with the Torah. So we discussed three concepts. We said with regards to the land of Israel, we have the term Natati in our parsha, and then we have the term Morasha in our parsha. With regards to Shabbat, we find in the Talmud and in our prayer that Shabbat is referred to as a matana, as a good gift, and also as a heritage. And with regards to the Torah, we find these two terms. So far, so good? Yeah? V'inei b'matana v'irusha yesh b'kol echad mehem mashen b'sheni. When we speak about a gift or an inheritance, each one has something that the other does not. When we speak about an inheritance, so then the mere fact that you're a son means you inherit. Doesn't matter if you're more pious, less pious. Bottom line, you're the next of kin. You get an inheritance. And even if a father has a son who's completely retarded, if the father suddenly dies, the law says and logic says that his son inherits him. The son isn't necessarily worthy of it. We'll have to figure out a way to help him manage. But bottom line, there's that connection, and it's there, like it or not. A gift is the exact opposite. You give a gift where you think the person is worthy, where you deem it correct to give the person a gift. You appreciate a person's actions. Our sages say, that there's a term in halacha, we say, if you wouldn't have a reason to gift him, you wouldn't have gifted him. The Talmud says, don't assume there's a gift for nothing. Either you gifted a person because of something he has done or because of something you hope he will do. But there's always a reason. There's something there. So then there's more of a concept that you give as much as you can with a gift. You're giving what you can. Whereas an inheritance, you're giving what there is. You know, there's no desire to give the best or the most. And the same is true when it comes to serving Hashem. We have an aspect of a matana and a yerusha. Rav Shlomo Mikarlin said that whoever keeps the Torah and mitzvos the way he should and keeps Shabbos the way he should, but did not work on Shabbos to sense the pleasure of Shabbos, then after his passing, they'll give him his wages in the Garden of Eden, but he's going to be like a bench in the Garden of Eden. He won't sense the pleasure. Rav Shlomo of Karlin said, you have to work in this world to sense the pleasure of Shabbos. And I'll give you a small example. It struck me as a child, my father would always sit and eat the crumbs of the challah at the table. After he'd slice the challah, we'd eat the challah, he would first finish the crumbs. And I only thought about it this week because every Shabbos I finish cutting the challah and I give one of the kids the challah tray and I say, could you pour the crumbs into the garbage? I said to myself, wait a second, why am I not enjoying the crumbs? You could enjoy the crumbs. You could pour them over your salad. You could do something with the crumbs. I never thought of it. But if you think about it, then you have what to do with crumbs. If you don't want it, someone else will want it. The kids end up arguing, I want the crumbs, I want the crumbs. Okay, enjoy the crumbs. Peru.
Like little pieces.
When you cut the little pieces. No, when you cut, so then little pieces fall. So, Rav Shlomo of Kalin said, it's not enough to keep Torah and mitzvos and Shabbos. You could keep Shabbos and not sense it. When was the last time you took a look at the Shabbos candles? You stopped and said, that's beautiful. And this is so in every aspect of life. The average parent runs through the average day, spending the average moment being averagely annoyed at their average child. Whereas if we'd stop and think and look, we could actually say, this is delicious, this is wonderful. I was getting off the train yesterday, and someone goes, grabs me by the sleeve. I turn around, it's a friend I haven't seen in half a decade. I say a friend, he's old enough to be my father, but we learned together. He's got a long white beard, and he tells me, wish me Mazel Tov. I say, okay, Mazel Tov, what's happening? He says, I have two children engaged. My second daughter got engaged last night. I said, Mazel Tov, that's great. He smiles and he says, it's great, and I have no clue where I'm getting the money to marry them off from. But you got to remember, this is the problems of the rich. Meaning, I'm wealthy, I'm fortunate to have this problem. That's the perspective. I have no clue how I'm doing it, but I'm very wealthy. I'm very lucky that my children got engaged, and now I have to worry about how I'm going to make it work. We run through life, and we miss it. You know, think about your average Shabbos. What's the most pleasurable thing you do on Shabbos? I think most people will say sleep. Now, isn't that a pity? What about Kabbalat Shabbat?
What about,
okay, but it's not only that. What about the meal with the family? What about the walk from your house to shul? What about the walk back? I'm not even talking about what goes on in shul. There are moments which you can cherish. If you actually stop and think about the idea, you're walking with your child, with your parent, with your friends. That walk to shul is something special. If you look at it, if you think about it. You guys, I assume you had the same thing. When you remember the feeling on the last day of school, when the summer vacation is about to start, I always felt that was my favorite moment of school and the vacation. That moment where you're just walking in and you know you have 2 months ahead of you of free time.
Mine was just after the bell rang and you walk out of class.
What? The last day.
The last day when it's over and you look back at the school and you're like, yes.
Right, I'm saying, it's much better than the day later because you've been waiting for that moment and you focus on that moment and you sense that moment. And the rest of the summer, days can go by and you don't really sense what's going on. It's like the story of the chocolate, right? I told you guys the story. Kid, I had a bar of marzipan, and it's not divided into pieces. Chocolate-covered marzipan. So the kids, I had remembered the kids saying they didn't like it. So the kids came in and said, we want some of that. So I said, fine. Okay, I decided I'm going to try something. I took the sharpest knife, and I sliced the chocolate-covered marzipan to the thinnest slices I could slice with the sharpest knife, and I wanted to see what they'd say. So they're innocent. They have no idea how you eat, you know, if you eat this way or that way. So each one took this thin slice and walked around sucking it. They were so excited. It was delicious. So I said to myself, I'm the dunce. I could eat a whole bar, and I won't enjoy it as much as they enjoyed that thin slice. And then I realized that sometimes You could eat a whole pack of chocolate or something else, and then you enjoy those last crumbs much more than you enjoyed the pack, because you're focused on them, you sense them, you try to get the taste out of them. You eat the whole pack, you don't even think what you're eating. So much of our joy in life stems from our focus. We have a choice what we focus on, and we let life go by. You could sit for a dinner with your kids and spend the whole dinner being annoyed, because this one's pulling that one's hair, and that one's pouring the ketchup out on the table, and the other one is rocking on their chair. Yeah, there's a ton to be annoyed at an average meal. But if you stop and look and smile and tell yourself, boy, I'm so rich, then you'll look at everything else differently, and then you start appreciating those moments. The Rav Shlomo of Karlin said, keeping all the Torah mitzvos, keeping Shabbos, but not focusing on enjoying Shabbos, then a person's going to come to the world to come, and he won't be able to enjoy that either. Ze achiluk ben Yerusha lematana. And here he hits the punchline. He says, you want to know the difference between an inheritance and a gift? That's the difference. An inheritance is something that every Jew gets. You don't have to work to get it. But at the same time, there's nothing too personal about it. You don't enjoy it too much. It's not that someone focused and said, I want to give you that. If they gifted you, then you realize they want it. If they give it as an inheritance, well, he relinquished ownership anyways. He was dying. What was he going to do with it? Take it to the grave? So he gave it to me. Fine. It's like a bench in the Garden of Eden. That the bench doesn't sense too much what's going on. And so to a person who gets an inheritance, it's hard to feel this great appreciation to the one who gave it. Whereas a gift is given when you feel you want to give something to that person. And then, the same is true with Shabbos. If a person works to attain that holiness, so then the one who's giving is giving because he cares, and the one who's receiving is receiving that care. That's the two concepts of Shabbos, an inheritance and a gift. Shabbos is like the world to come, right? Shabbos is Me'ein Olam Haba. Shabbos, we say, Mizmor Shir Lioma Shabbos is talking about the future Shabbos. The concept of Shabbos is tap into the world to come. You're spending your whole week in this world working and fighting and dealing. Take a day and connect to the world to come. We sing it on Shabbos, Me'ein Olam Haba, right? The verse says in Isaiah, if you will only rest on Shabbos, don't go running around, don't go doing business, then you will see what it is to have pleasure with Hashem. And that's the idea of the gift of Shabbos. Hashem says, I have a good gift, I want to give it to them. It's a gift, it's not an inheritance at that point. But if a person doesn't work on sensing that on Shabbos, he just flies through, shuts his cell phone, takes his shower, goes to shul, trudges home, eats the chunt, complains about indigestion, goes to sleep another 4 hours, gets up and says, that was a nasty chunt, too much spices, trudges his way to mincha, does everything right, stands there and focuses, comes back, has a shaus sudis, wonders what it would be like to be Dutch and be able to eat a milchik shaus sudis in the winter. And then he goes to Meiriv, and Shabbos passed him by. So he inherited Shabbos. He's a good Jew. From birth, he's doing his heritage, everything's nice. But he isn't getting that good gift. He's not tapping into that personal relationship with Hashem, that idea of enjoying Shabbos, connecting to the world to come. And then he becomes like a bench in the Garden of Eden. If you work for a minute, I challenge you. This Shabbos, pause. When you're about to take a bite of cholent, it doesn't even have to be the first bite. Whenever you remember, stop and say, now I'm focusing on enjoying this in honor of Shabbos. Take that bite and close your eyes and enjoy it. You'll see that that bite will taste so much better than every other bite because you're focusing on enjoying Shabbos. The same is true with regards to the Torah. A guy could learn Torah and he ain't working hard to connect. And then he has no pleasure in Torah. I'm doing what my dad did. I'm doing what the yeshiva's doing. It's my heritage. So he's a good Jew. But then you have the relationship between Hashem and Moshe after Moshe worked 40 days and 40 nights. And if a person works hard at attaining the Torah, so then he's getting the Torah as a gift, like the Kala. He's getting the Torah as something so personal. It's like a Kala. It's a personal fit. But that takes time. We make a bracha, Baruch Ata Hashem Noten HaTorah, that God gives us the Torah as a gift, something very personal. It's not just the heritage, the Jewish way. And if a person can connect to the Torah, then he finds a sweetness that's more sweet than anything else in the world. I'll tell you something. I try to be honest in our learning. Throughout my youth, the Rabbeim would tell me that the Torah is the sweetest thing in the world. And I didn't believe him. I didn't think it was sweet at all. It was interesting, you know, but so was Tom Clancy. Okay. Say that. And somehow Tom Clancy was hard to put down and the Gemara was so easy to put down. You know, I can tell you today that I'm not just reading what the Netivot Shalom says. It took decades to get there. But I can tell you, as one who's read Tom Clancy and been around the block a few times, it really is the sweetest thing. And it's something that can enrich all of one's life. One of the hardships in Machon Meir is that you guys work very, very hard. And yet it's very hard to tap into the sweetness of learning because you're working hard getting the letters right. Which one's the Chaf and which one's the Kuf and which one's the Ches? It's a little hard. Someone tells you it's on page Chaf Ches. Which page is that? You know, did he say Kuf Ches or Chaf Ches? So you're working on getting the letters right. Now the words, now the sentence, and then there's Aramaic and Hebrew. Wait a second, this is really tough. It's very hard to tap into that sweetness. Maybe as you learn the halachot without breaking your head in the Gemara, even though the greatest sweetness is in the Gemara, when you can actually connect and see what's going on. But you should know it's something to aspire to. I grew up in Israel, right? I knew Hebrew from birth. And I studied in Orthodox, from environments, from the time I was a kid. And it still took me decades to get there. I'm telling you, I didn't think it was so sweet. For a long time, I learned it. But whatever, you know. What happens is you need a certain knowledge base in order for it to become fun and sweet and you feel like you're connecting. So long as everything's new, so it's interesting, but you can't tap into that sweetness. I'm just telling you, I'm not just reading the words he's saying here. I can tell to you on a personal level. Bezrat Hashem, I wish you all to get there. You'll learn enough, you'll get there. It can be the sweetest thing, but I don't think it can be that until you start getting a broader picture of what's going on. When you start out, it's hard. It's all like, okay, interesting, nice, you know. So the halacha says, cut this nail, that nail, and this nail. Now what if the halacha would say, cut this nail and do this, cut that nail and do that, cut this nail and then do this? You know, it would make no difference, right? Because you don't see why this makes sense and why that doesn't make sense, right? So it's all a little bit foreign. And as you learn more and you get more understanding, you connect more to what's going on, suddenly you see, hey, no. It's exactly this way and not that way. And there's a reason and there's a balance in life. One advantage that you guys have is that you've seen the broader world. So when you come to the Torah, you can appreciate many things that other people don't appreciate. Like one guy told me, it's so funny, it's not one guy told me. I've heard this story so many times. Person says, my mother's on her fifth marriage. But it's not a question that she's on her fifth marriage because the way Western society views marriage, going into it and staying in it are both totally different concepts than in Judaism. So I look at a person who comes from that and I think to myself, he has a much greater appreciation than me for the whole concept of marriage in Judaism, because Bottom line, he sees what the alternative is. What are people dating for in the Western world, and what does their marriage look like, and what does the Torah give us? And again, with the broader perspective, you can appreciate the balanced approach of the Torah. You have one part of the world that says, you get married and you stay with the person for life, finished, no way out. One extreme. You have another extreme that says, you get married, you don't like it, goodbye. You don't. There's a prettier girl across the street, so find your way there. It doesn't necessarily contradict your marriage. All kinds of things that just don't exist in our marriages. And then you have the Torah's way, which is not this nor that. You're supposed to be faithful. You're supposed to be committed. You're supposed to build for life. If one, unfortunately, divorces, we're taught that even the altar sheds tears. There's a concept that it's as though all of earth is shuddering as a person gets divorced, and yet he has the capacity to do that. The Torah gives him that right, gives him that right, gives her that right. So there's this balanced middle-of-the-road approach. You see how hard it is to get there. You see how other people, anything they try, is could get pretty close, but it's not going to be there. So that's where I think, although from the learning itself, it'll take time to see the sweetness, from the concepts, from the broader perspective you guys have, I think you can see more than other people would see the sweetness and the balance of the Torah. So the Netivot Shalom says the same is true when it comes to Eretz Yisrael. There's an idea that Eretz Yisrael is ours. And a guy could be living here in Israel and he feels zero connection. I used to go to a barber before I learned that I could do the same thing with a machine. And back then I had hair. You guys could laugh. When I make a joke, you could laugh. You could laugh when I don't make a joke. Not a joke, I did have hair back then. At any rate, so this was the time of the Oslo Accords. And I was here for my first year. And he says, I know you learned in yeshiva. And he has like the scissors by my head. And he says, I know you learned in yeshiva. You don't agree with me. But from my perspective, all I want is peace. Why don't they give away Jerusalem and the Temple Mount? Who cares? Let's just have peace here. What do we need all this fighting for? I'm sitting there. He's got the scissors. You know. I said, you know, don't you care about the land of Israel and the importance? And do you really think we'll get to peace if we just give and give and give? And he said, if it were up to me, I'd give it all away. What do I care if there's a Palestinian prime minister? Let him run the show if that'll make him happy. I said, and he says, I don't mind leaving Israel. I'm thinking, I just got here. This is my first year here. I've been trying for years to get here, and you live here, you were born here, and you just give it away just like that. It means nothing to you. Then Tivot Shalom says, a person can live in the land of Israel and feel nothing. There's nothing special about it. I don't know if you've encountered it yet, but I hear it often. People say, if I could, I'd leave. Really? Oy vey. That's an inheritance. You have it. No special relationship between the two. You happen to be in the line. You get it. But then there's the concept of matana, something very personal, where a Jew merits to sense the holiness and to feel like, wow, I've gotten the best land in the world. I've gotten the best portion. Our sages say, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai says, there are three good gifts that God gave Israel, and all of them can only be acquired through Yisurim, through hardships. Torah, the land of Israel, and the world to come. We learn them all out from verses. Yeah?
There's the cover of us alive.
Oh. Yeah.